Hello.
This is Joya Italiano.
This is Jeff Ekman.
And welcome to Oh, That's a Thing, a podcast about the real science and sci-fi movies.
Even if you haven't seen the movie, don't worry. We use the movies as jumping off points for some pretty awesome and real topics.
That's right. We're not experts at all. We're actually just a couple of goons who Googled some stuff. But this stuff is pretty cool.
Yeah, so sit back, relax, maybe learn a thing or two. Here we go.
Here we go. Ooh, welcome to Tremors.
Welcome to the Tremors. Here we are, ready to go. What a classic movie this was.
Oh my God, this is one of those that I had seen so many times as a kid. I don't know why it was just always on TV, but...
It felt like it was made for TV. Not that it was like a made-for-TV movie, but that it was made to be played on TV.
Like, that had to have been some part of the storyboarding process, right? Yeah. Just being like, guys, people are going to be watching this for... decades.
You were telling me that they removed like a ton of F-bombs from the movie.
Oh yeah, I think, well, originally it had an R rating, not because of the violence but because of the language, and they removed like upwards of 20 something, so you can like see it in the movie, like where there'll be moments where they just obviously did some like voiceover.
Yeah, what
it.
Was the one that I called out where I was like, nobody says like dang or
or something like that. Mother Thumper.
Mother Thumper.
Was one of them. Yeah, I forget. But yeah. Anyway, this is crazy. Do you want to listen to the trailer?
Yep.
A scorched outpost in the middle of nowhere.
You know how close I am to leaving this place right now? How close?
Maybe that's why Val and Earl decided to leave town.
Oh, whoa, 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 whoa!
They just picked the wrong day to do it.
You guys better get the hell out of here. There's a killer on the loose.
That's how they get you. They're under the ground.
But where do they come from?
I vote for outer space. No way these are local boys.
No Richter scale can measure it.
They're coming!
No scientist can explain it.
Bert, they're under the ground!
And no one knows what to call it.
Megaworms or suckers or suckoids.
Tremors.
Oh, so many wonderful memories. Fred Ward, Kay Bacon.
I mean, 1990 was a wonderful time.
What a time.
Yeah. I find it amazing that this movie spawned 5 movies and a TV series.
Well, yeah. I mean, this was unexpectedly really popular.
Yeah.
Because wasn't it Kay Bacon, but I mean Kevin Bacon. I feel like we're at that.
People
they get
know.
It. We're so familiar that I just call him Kay.
Yeah.
But wasn't he saying like, God, where's my career gone that I'm sitting here?
I read that he broke down and fell to the sidewalk screaming to his pregnant wife, I can't believe I'm doing a movie about underground worms.
Right. You're like, from Footloose to now? Oh, yeah. My God. Well, it's interesting. The writer, S.S. Wilson, said that he got the idea for the film while he was working for the U.S. Navy. In the California desert. So while he was resting on a rock, he imagined what it might be like if something underground kept him from getting off the rock. Now, we've all played that, you know, don't step in the lava game.
Yeah,
where you got to keep above, you know.
Yeah, it basically is taken to an entire movie.
But instead of lava, like pretend lava, what if there were fucking underground worms that could sense your vibration?
Well, that guy, S.S. Wilson, he also wrote such movies as Short Circuit and Ghost Dad. And The Wild Wild West with Will Smith.
Okay, all right. Wild Wild West.
So he was a guy. He was around.
Yeah. Input. Need input.
Exactly.
Short Circuit. Side note, we probably need to be doing that sometimes.
Oh, we're definitely going to have to do Short Circuit. I mean, Johnny Five will be alive. The director of Tremors is a guy named Ron Underwood, who his follow-up to Tremors was City Slickers.
What?
Which was, like, I rewatched it recently as an adult. It is so good.
But doesn't
it
make
a great
so
movie.
Much sense with totally. Fred and Kevin, just like their quips and who's its and what's its in between the terror?
When we were watching it, I was thinking about how much I wanted them to run into Billy Crystal and Bruno Kirby.
What are you guys
and,
doing here?
And then be like, what?
God.
Underground worms.
That totally makes sense. The prototype for City Slickers. Ay, ay, ay.
But he later directed the biggest box office flop of all time. Which is The Adventures of Pluto Nash.
I don't remember that.
It was an Eddie Murphy movie that was made for $100 million. The budget was like more than $100 million. And its total gross, not opening weekend, but total gross, was $4 million.
No way. What year was that?
2002. It's because it's like remembered as the biggest flop, like budget to gross ratio of all time.
Oh my God. I want to know why. I wish I knew anything about the movie or how it was marketed.
I've seen it a bunch. It's unbelievable. We should do it. We should totally do it. Okay. It absolutely fits in the sci-fi. It's fucking insane. It's about Eddie Murphy is like a smuggler who wants to open a nightclub on the moon. What? And it's got everybody in it. Randy Quaid, Joe Pantoliano, Jay Moore, Luis Guzman.
Joey Pants
is
oh
in
God,
it. You got
my
Peter
old
Boyle. You got Pam Grier, John Cleese.
Had me a Rosario Joey Pants. Dawson. I've told you about my run-in with Joey, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Wow,
that's
takes
a crazy
me back.
Story.
Anyway.
I mean, I don't know. Should you tell that story or should we hold it?
We might hold it.
We should hold
we
it
should
for
hold it for when
Pluto.
We actually do a movie that has Joey Pants in it.
Like The Adventures of Pluto Nash.
That's correct. Or The Matrix, frankly. But
yeah,
I mean...
Well, we just did their 13th floor. I can't imagine that we're going to do The Matrix soon. So, yeah. Working titles for Tremors include Beneath Perfection, because the town that they were in was called Perfection.
Dead Silence,
yeah, and Land Sharks.
Oh, boy.
Which, man.
Straightforward, right?
I mean, it makes sense. Land Shark. I actually looked into animals in real life that communicate through vibrations or hunt through vibrations. Whoa. And that is definitely how the, quote, graboids, as they call them in the movie.
Yeah. They refer to them as worms the majority of the time, but then, like, there's a time where they mention graboids.
And then they're like, the graboids are going to get you. Yeah.
I just didn't even bother to go that far. This, like, my whole life I've been like, and then the tremors come. Like, I just refer to them as tremors. You're like, no, Joya, they produce the tremors.
They sense the tremors. Yeah.
They are not tremors. Let's just be clear about that.
But we all know when you're saying the tremors were after me, we know
you
that you're
sandworms.
Talking about sandworms. So, male jumping spiders attract females by generating vibrations, by rubbing parts of their bodies together, drumming body parts on the ground, and vibrating special organs.
Their pee-pees?
I assume.
Hope so.
I assume that's what they mean.
The most special.
These vibrations not only make the female more likely to mate, but they also decrease the chances that she will eat her suitor.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Some jumping spiders take advantage of other spiders' sensitivity to vibrations and prey on them. So basically, they invade another spider's web and mimic the vibrations of an insect struggling to escape.
Oh.
And then the spider comes out to inspect, like, the trapped fly, and then the other spider, like, attacks and eats it.
Holy shit.
And other spider species will imitate the vibrations of a male looking for a female to, and then, like, so he's, like, drumming on the ground. Like he wants
so
to bone.
So basically he's trying to send out some vibes.
It's exactly what they're doing. They're literally and figuratively sending out some vibes.
I'm picking up good vibrations. Sorry.
But then this guy, when like this other spider species, when like the female comes, he'll attack instead of
That's
mate.
Fucked up.
Yeah.
Well, the only reason because as you're talking, of course, it's like, oh man, yeah, of course. We pick up on vibes all the time. But then I'm
right,
just wondering, where did that come from in terms of talking about ours? Like, I get like pheromones and chemistry and all
yeah.
of that kind of shit, but like, where does that
like
come from?
Is it like the trembling when you like
my heart has gone a pitter pat?
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of thing.
I see. Yeah, the good vibrations of your heartbeat. That must be
you guys,
it.
Guys, right?
Right.
That's a thing.
So, also, elephants communicate through vibrations.
Okay.
And their calls have like a low frequency which travels further through the ground than through air. And elephants can tell each other about danger from miles away through that. So researchers have observed elephants leaning forward and putting more weight on their front legs to increase like ground contact so that they can better pick up vibrations from like herds that are miles away to say like, hey, there's some wolves in the area or something.
Wow.
Or not wolves, but you know what I mean.
I mean, this just harkens back to our animal communication discussion where it's like, just because we don't hear
it, because
it's not
words.
There.
Yeah.
I guess also... opera singers have a lot of vibrato in their voice.
That's true.
What's up with that? Oh, I want to. I'm like, what's the deal with vibrato?
Like, why do they do it?
Or like, why is that? Like, it's like, oh, that sounds so beautiful. The like fluctuating of the vocal cords of like, oh,
that is a good, like,
you know?
What is it about that like hits the beauty part of the brain?
Is that some fucking bestial shit? I didn't look into it, but I'm gonna file it back in my little filing cabinet brain.
Another one is mole rats, which live underground in burrows where there's not much light and sound doesn't travel very far. So they bang their heads against the walls of their tunnels.
Uh-huh.
And the demon mole rat, which is an African demon mole rat, that's what they call it.
All right.
They headbang to talk to each other. And the pattern of their banging might even be specific enough to communicate an individual's identity to their neighbors.
Wow.
So
that makes a little bit more sense because they're blind. They burrow. Like, that seems to be more.
And they're kind of like, woodpeckering against the side of the tunnel.
Just headbanging away.
One more is a termite mound. If threatened by a predator like an aardvark, the termites will bang their heads on the ground 11 times a second. But like one termite's head drumming only travels about 15 inches. But any termite close enough to hear that alarm responds by drumming its head too. So the alarm spreads like a chain reaction through the colony.
Well, because I'm thinking about that in terms of sonar. Because that's, I know it's different, but it's about the sound bouncing, right? Or like echoes. I know I don't know
echolocation
enough about
it. Does have to do with like it bouncing off of the surfaces of walls and then you being able to like figure out where the walls are based on how the sound reflected back to you.
Now, is that also like a physical vibration?
Yeah, okay. Sound is a physical vibration.
Right, that's what I thought. So
that's why it doesn't travel through space. Yeah. Is there's no air to vibrate.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that's why it travels through water better than air.
So even though you don't have eyes, you can still see. Some of these animals. Well, that's why I just thought it was cool with the elephants, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're above ground. They don't burrow anything like that. But to just think that they, like, get down on their legs to feel it or...
Yeah, they the fact that their yell or call or whatever you want to call it has low frequency that actually vibrates the ground.
Sweet baritone, man. Science.
I looked into a bunch about earthquakes. And specifically, I also looked into how a seismograph works. So a seismograph is what measures earthquakes, and it's a surprisingly simple machine. Basically, it has a base that sits secure to the ground, and then above the base, they hang like a weight that has a small pen on the bottom, and the pen barely touches a piece of paper that goes along.
Right, it seems pretty low-key.
Yeah, so if the ground shakes, the base shakes, and the pen that's attached to the weight like stays still.
Yeah.
And so the paper moves back and forth, and the pen makes like a drawing as it comes across.
Oh, okay.
And then the paper that comes out has like these squigglies.
Right.
And that measures how much shaking is happening on the ground because it's literally just like, what if a pen was suspended above the earth, above a piece of paper, and it stayed still, but the ground shook, and the paper shook.
Right, and you see that in the movie where things start to get a little bit cuckoo, and it's like, it's all over the fucking place. There's these crazy lines.
Exactly. So, quick recap on some high school geology to talk about earthquakes.
Let's do it.
In the Earth's crust are a bunch of tectonic plates that are moving slowly, some of them moving away from each other, some crashing into each other in slow motion. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when they crash into each other, one plate will slide on top of the other, and that pushes up mountains and causes earthquakes and stuff. A lot of the time they slide across each other, and they kind of catch on each other. And as pressure builds up, as they're like caught, it'll eventually build up to the point where it suddenly releases and it goes boom, and the plates shift suddenly, and that causes an earthquake. The plates move about 1.3 inches a year, which is about the same rate as your fingernails grow, which I remember hearing that as a kid and being like, is that true?
Right.
It is.
It is. Wow. Yeah. They didn't lie to us.
They didn't. So it's unlikely that we'll ever be able to like really predict earthquakes because we can understand that this pressure is building up and we can kind of measure the pressure that's building, but we don't know when it's going to release.
Right. Which is why we live in this like imminent danger even in LA here.
Exactly.
like it could be today. It could be.
Yeah. What I read was that there's a 99.7% chance that it'll happen sometime between 5 minutes from now and 2037.
Right. You're like, That's unhelpful.
Right. But it is it's definitely going to happen. Because that's a whole thing where the San Andreas Fault's southernmost stretch hasn't ruptured since 1680, which is 337 years ago. And a big earthquake happens there every 150 to 200 years. So we're way overdue for a super earthquake.
Now, are we prepared for something like that?
I mean, we're as well prepared as you can. Like, I was thinking about this. The USGS released its 2017 earthquake forecast in March, and it identified California as at the most risk for ground shaking hazards. Let me take that away from her.
Sorry, folks.
Dog pause. So yeah, the USGS released the 2017 earthquake forecast in March, and it identified California as at the most risk, and it also identified Oklahoma as getting close to the most risk because of man-made earthquakes.
Because of fucking fracking, no?
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
So I don't know that much about fracking, except for that it just really fucks with...
Earthquakes.
The earth.
Yeah, it's
or
like...
just because you're, like, drilling into those...
You're shooting high-pressure water into rocks to break them apart. To fracture the rocks. It's, like, deep underground. It's like,
Right.
Duh, it causes earthquakes.
That's outrageous.
Yeah, it's... a bad practice. So the USGS claims that both California and Oklahoma face a 5 to 12% risk for a damaging earthquake this year.
This year.
Yeah, for a damaging earthquake. Now, does that mean the big one?
Right, no.
Not necessarily, but
still. I mean, again, that's one of those things where I'm not going to, because I just, every time I'm on the fucking highway, I'm like, what if it's now?
Right. I know.
It's like, what would happen? That,
or like if you're on a bridge or something.
Yeah. Just, yeah. You know, hope I'm like in the parking garage. Like, is it going to be now? Am I going to get crumbled, like just under all this rubble, this kind of stuff?
Well, I think like if you're in a building that hasn't been retrofitted or like is like really old, there isn't much that you can do. It's possible that it will collapse on you.
Yeah.
And that's why we have codes for earthquake prevention stuff, and like you have to build in like there's ways of building buildings where we can make them so that they still stand.
We got insurance and stuff.
Right, you can buy an earthquake kit right now, which I saw one on Amazon for $35 for two people. They also come in 4-person kits and stuff like that, and they're trying to give you supplies to last for 3 days in case there's issues with water and power getting restored, or like to get through to a time where humanitarian aid could get set up.
Right.
And, you know, included in the kit is food, water, emergency blankets, a first aid kit, safety light sticks, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Some of them include that life straw, that straw that I was telling you about, that
purifies water.
Yeah, yeah. Man. So everybody should probably get one of those. I don't, I mean, $35 on Amazon, I was like, let me order one.
Anybody in California and or Oklahoma.
Yeah, I recommend getting one. I mean, what's the worst that you keep it in a closet, worst case?
Yeah.
But, okay, so to get into prediction, it's unlikely that we'll ever really be able to predict earthquakes, but we can get to a place where we can give, like, some advanced notice, because first of all, it does like take time for the earthquake to spread out across a large space. There's two major parts to an earthquake. There's the P wave and then there's the S wave. And the P wave moves much faster than the S wave. Like think of it like the P wave is the lightning and the S wave is the thunder that follows.
Gotcha.
We're working on systems where we can detect a P wave and immediately send out one of those phone alerts, like the Amber Alerts that like sometimes like will startle you because like your phone like suddenly sounds like an alarm. Do you have that on your Android phone?
It's really intense.
Right. And so this would be that, but tell you like, hey, an earthquake's going to hit in 10 seconds.
P.S. Earthquake's afoot.
P.S. P-wave, S-wave.
That's right.
Got it. So you would look down at your phone, you'd get like maybe a 10 second up to a minute advance notice.
Right.
That's more than enough time to get to a place where like you're not standing next to a bookcase that's going to fall on your head or get under something.
Could you imagine if you were like on Splash Mountain or something and you're like, here we go, we're about to.
Like as like, you're the cresting ride. The hill, you look down and it's like earthquake.
You've got 10
seconds. get off of the ride.
But still smile for the picture.
Yeah.
Oh,
and then it would be like Splash Mountain, and it causes a tsunami?
Right.
Earthquakes sometimes cause tsunamis.
I think it would be fun. There would be a, zippity-doo-dah, zippity. Oh, God.
Sometimes earthquakes are so intense that they'll actually liquefy soil.
Yeah.
And it's this process called liquefaction.
Yeah.
Where, like, suddenly water comes up through cracks after a earthquake. And people are like, why is there all this water? And sometimes it can be so bad, it'll like turn the sand almost into quicksand.
Right.
And it will actually cause buildings to collapse from that, not from the earthquake, but from the fact that the soil underneath the building's foundation has suddenly liquefied.
Right. So in the movie, they show that sort of like vacuum style. Like if you get stuck in the quicksand, you can't get out. That sort of thing. So I was looking into quicksand.
Movie quicksand.
Yeah, except where you're just like, oh, I can't move. It's sucking me down. Like actively sucking you down. And that's not actually how quicksand works. So quicksand is actually, it's basically just ordinary sand that has been so saturated with water that the friction between the sand particles is reduced. So like, you know, regular sand holds you up just fine. Even if you go to like moderately wet sand closer to the water, it's really compact. That's why you're able to build sandcastles. But if there's an excessive amount of water introduced to the sand, it basically just flows through the sand and forces those sand particles apart, and that causes the ground to loosen, and any mass on the sand won't be able to be held up. So that's why you sink. What's interesting though is it's not that the sand will suck you down. It's that your movements are going to cause you to dig yourself deeper into the sand. The human body has a density of 62.4 pounds per cubic foot and is able to float on water. Quicksand is actually denser than water. It's 125 pounds per cubic foot. So you can float more easily on quicksand than on water. So the idea is to not panic. It's most people who actually drown in quicksand, or any liquid for that matter, are usually those who like start panicking and flailing your arms and shit around.
Are there cases of people actually getting to drowning in it?
Generally speaking, quicksand is not that deep. So if for some reason, like if you get in your head and you're not able to get your head out, then that can be a problem. But most of the time, all you have to do is just like chill and you'll just float. It's not likely that it would become deep enough to
cover. And if you have like really slow movements, you can get yourself out of it, right?
Yeah, because that reduces the viscosity. So you're basically able to just gently, like, you can't see what I'm doing right now, but I'm very slowly and angelically moving my arms around. And
I can attest to it. She's in fact doing that.
Eyewitness. So yeah, if you spread your arms and legs far apart and lean over, you actually can increase your surface area, and that'll allow you to float a little bit easier.
That makes
the thing is, though, there's a difference between saying don't panic and being like, oh fuck, I'm in this quicksand, I need to freak out, you know what I mean? Like, it's sort of like if you end up in raging river or something, you're supposed to chill and just like put your hands to your sides, feet first,
try to get your feet first so that your head doesn't smash into
but
a rock.
How many times, like, if you're in the panic mode and you've never been in the situation before, you're probably gonna fly.
Well, it's like I was telling you about with avalanches a few weeks ago,
putting
where
your hands in front of you
to like make space. It's like to have the wherewithal to like do these things as the event is happening,
right?
Like, and you're terrified.
Most of these,
but it also sounds like quicksand just happens slowly enough that you shouldn't be that freaked out anyway,
right? Unfortunately, the kind of quicksand that I've imagined from playing years of Super Mario, is not. That's not the thing. I mean, but you know, certainly it would become harder and harder to get out based on how high. You know, if it goes up above your knees, that's going to become pretty hard. If it's above your waist, even harder, because then how are you not going to just like try to just kick? I could see that impulse of being like, oh, just quickly kick out of here, and that's just going to get you farther into the hole.
A lot of the cases where it becomes a problem is when nobody's nearby and you become stuck, and so it can become a thing where like the weather or predators, or you're just like half stuck in the ground and can't really get yourself out and can't call for help.
Yeah.
So you could die of starvation or dehydration and stuff.
Yeah.
To move within quicksand, a person has to apply enough pressure on the compacted sand to reintroduce enough water to liquefy it.
Uh-huh. So to make it sort of that moderately wet sand, like if you're trying to build sandcastles, it's much more solid feeling.
Right.
You'd have to be a fucking meditation guru in order to just like quiet that mind enough to just like trust it. Like, I know I'm going to float.
I know.
Float on, as Modest Mouse told us. Science. Pogo sticks, am I right? I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Sorry. I mean, I should probably give some context for this. There's a prominent scene in Tremors where there's a, you know, some dumbass kid listening to a Walkman on their pogo stick.
Some dumb four-year-old girl.
Fucking bitch. Anyway, she's jumping up and down on a pogo stick, and that causes some vibrations to go through the floor, and so everybody's bugging out. They're like, oh, the worms, the graboids will hear, you know.
It's great. You know, it's set up that she's pogo. She's like going for a record of most pogos.
Right, because like what game could she be playing that's more vibrant? Like, if only she had a basketball in her hand, like dribbling a basketball while pogoing.
Do you remember the Skip It?
Oh, God, did I own a Skip It? Yeah. I loved that fucking thing.
That would be great.
God.
I miss those. You could like take somebody's head off with those things. Like, you'd really get some speed up.
If you got some serious speed and you didn't flex that foot, then it could fly right off.
Yep.
I'm sure it caused a lot of damage.
I have a feeling there's a reason we don't see them around anymore.
Right. Whereas pogo sticks are ever present, didn't really know. We'll get into this. Let's talk about the history of the pogo stick, shall we?
Absolutely.
So, for any of you clowns out there who don't know what a pogo stick is, sorry to be a complete dick, but it's like there are some clowns out there.
If you're a clown and you don't know what a pogo stick is,
you're not very good. You should be
you
fired.
You should really wake up.
Okay, what's a pogo stick? Pogo stick is basically just a pole with a handle at the top and footrest near the bottom and a spring located somewhere along the pole. You put your feet on the foot pads. While balancing on the pole, you jump up and down with a bending action in the knees. You get lifted by the recoil of the spring and you bounce around. Bada bing, bada boom. That's a pogo stick.
That's a pogo stick. bada bing, bada pogo.
So, a 1922 issue of Popular Science Monthly claimed at one point that pogo sticks were invented by a blacksmith in the Transylvanian village of Pogo in the 1700s so that people could cross muddy areas without getting their feet dirty or wet.
Hmm.
Does anybody know if that's true? No.
Wait, so the idea... instead of putting on shoes,
right?
This just, is they're gonna hop across.
Yeah, what if it's a big old puddle that you don't? Your shoes aren't, you know, your high heels aren't enough to get you over that dog shit and that muddy little water. Anyway, this is who knows whether or not that's true because there. But then later, there was a spring stilt utilizing compression springs on each foot, and that was patented in 1891 by George H. Harrington of Wichita, Kansas, for quote leaping great distances and heights. Then in 1930, there was a patent for a spring and hopping stilt invented by Max Polig and Ernst Goetschall from Germany.
What?
Pogo.
So what was it called before then? The spring stick?
They called it a spring stilt. Then there was the patent for the, quote, spring and hopping stilt, but it wasn't called pogo at that time, right? But some people say that because it's Max Polig and Ernst Goetschall, that that was the reason. It was there's two names.
I can't believe that there was a po and a go. And though, like, it wasn't like pole. Go.
Right, something like that.
Like the verbs.
The lore is crazy.
The noun and the verb.
There's even more claims in terms of where
there's
that
came
from.
There's even more lore?
Yeah, there's more lore. Because then, in 1957, the two-handle pogo stick was designed and patented by George B. Hansberg. Now, previously, his company, SBI...
The handle with the Hansberg?
That's right. So his company, SBI Enterprises... had previously supplied some toy store with the, quote, master pogo, which sparked a pogo craze in the 20s. Hansberg even taught the chorus dancers of the Ziegfeld Follies how to pogo, which is pretty cool.
What's the Ziegfeld Follies?
Oh, you don't know. It's like old school, like...
Like the Rockettes?
No, very pre-Rockettes. It's sort of like old-timey, dancers, all kind of like vaudeville style. Yeah, exactly. That's the word I was looking for, vaudeville. But even Hansberg had... I was like, you know, bada-ba-bing, bada-ba-dee
people.
Vaudeville.
Yeah, vaudeville.
Hello. But apparently he had claimed that the inspiration behind the pogo stick came from a visit to Burma where he met a farmer who'd made a wood and spring contraption for his daughter named Pogo.
What?
So who knows? Transylvanian town named Pogo. We got the Po and the Go with the two guys. Then we got this little Burmese chick
named
Pogo.
His daughter Pogo?
Are any of them true? We don't know.
I buy the middle one.
Yeah.
I buy that there was a guy that started with Po and another guy who started with Go.
That's the most logical of all. Instead of being like, ah, little Pogo, she used the stick to travel to the temple for prayer. Right. Like,
it also
that's
sounds like he was like, okay, I'm naming my girl Pogo,
yeah,
and then I'm going to tell everybody that I named the Pogo stick after her.
No, but then Hansberg wanted to name Pogo stick after Pogo. He didn't, the father didn't name the stick after his daughter Pogo. Hansberg met the little girl named Pogo and was like, ah, your father invented some kind of stick. I'm going to call it the Pogo stick. It was the white man's going into some Burmese town.
Wow. White man from town.
Exactly. The popularity of the pogo stick fluctuated over the years, but it specifically rose to prominence in the 70s due to some crazy marketing scheme by this Irish-Italian immigrant, Ryan Recchia. Then since then, there's all these shows performed with pogo sticks. Marriages have been performed on pogo sticks. Jumping contests are... Yeah.
Where all parties involved, or just the priest, or... just the bride and groom.
I know. There's not enough specification of that story.
I need to know the audio from that, because just the sound of like,
will
do you?
You
do they have to only
this?
Speak when they're in the air?
That's right. It's the only way. Because otherwise, if someone's recording it, you're going to be like, will you?
Well, it's just to me, the sounds of like the light sounds of a spring. Over and over again, like
it's terrible. There's a world record that's been set of
I still on the marriage thing.
Oh God!
Like they're pogoing while they're kissing. Are they like in unison with the pogos? Like, did they work really hard to get their pogo jumps perfect?
You should write a pilot about
it. I got
this.
A lot of questions.
Just pogo marriage. There's a world record set. It's currently standing at 20 hours and 13 minutes.
How many hops?
I don't know how many hops, but it's like 20 hours, bro. Like, is this whatever? Do your thing. Everybody has dreams. Have you heard of extreme pogo or X pogo?
Oh, is this where I have seen like crazy tricks with pogo stuff where people are doing flips and like bouncing off walls and shit?
It's a fucking thing. In 2001, this guy Carlton Calvin invented the air-powered pogo stick.
Oh, no.
And now there's these like new crazy pogo sticks that like you can get upwards of 10 feet. Like,
no.
Yeah. So that's measured from the ground to the top of the tip, 10 feet.
From the base to the tip.
Yeah. Just make it very, very clear. Base to the tip, 10 foot, 10 foot pogo. There's like exhibition teams. There's something called Pogo Palooza.
Really?
That's right.
There's like a whole...
It's a world.
Is it a music festival? Like, what are they? Are they showing off fancy new
pogo sticks? It's like fucking extreme skateboarding and shit. It's like extreme sports, but pogo.
And that's what happens at Pogo Palooza?
That's right.
Yeah. Ugh. Where did the Palooza come
exactly,
from?
Exactly, like Lollapalooza. Yeah.
Exactly. Why
that's the thing that's like a lot of that. You know,
it's a palooza.
It's a palooza, when does whatever.
Something cross the threshold
it's a palooza,
into
pogo.
Palooza?
Come to the Pogo Palooza.
It's not a con. It's a palooza.
But, you know, on one hand, I'm like, what a bunch of dorks, am I right? But it's like, fucking backflips, why not? You still have to learn
Sounds
how
awesome.
To land on one of those things without wrecking yourself.
Yeah, I bet it's incredible to watch somebody do that.
So,
you know.
Pogo sticks, man. Have you ever used one?
When I was a little kid.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're making me want to get one.
I feel like I'm going to give it a shot. And I feel like they probably...
You're going to make it your thing?
You could imagine the early prototypes were, like, the springs were probably so, like, ow, my joints!
Yeah,
you know, but now, like, the aerodynamic, the shock absorption, I'm sure it's like, oh, this is like, it's like on a cloud, you know? I would love that.
Related to earthquakes are volcanoes. And I wanted to talk about a moon of Jupiter called Io, which has the most active volcanoes in the solar system.
Io.
Io. Named by Ed McMahon.
Io.
So there's only four known actively volcanic worlds in the solar system, which are Earth, Enceladus, a moon of Saturn's, Triton, a moon of Neptune, and Io, a moon of Jupiter. And there's more than 400 active volcanoes on Io. And they're constantly erupting.
Really?
And basically the whole surface of the moon is constantly being resurfaced by these volcanoes.
Wow.
Like Neil deGrasse Tyson likes to say, if you drew a map of the surface of Io, the map would be obsolete within a year.
Wow.
Which is really cool to me. Like,
why? Just because it's like constantly changing?
Yeah, it's like, just the idea that there's a volcano planet out there.
Right.
Well, it was also interesting because we sent Voyager in the 70s and took pictures of it. And then we sent another spacecraft in the 90s and took pictures of it. And we were like, wow, the whole thing looks different. Like different volcanoes have appeared. It's completely resurfaced. So the volcanoes exist for a different reason than the ones on Earth. It has an eccentric orbit around Jupiter. So it's constantly being squeezed and pulled and squeezed and pulled as it goes like closer to Jupiter and further away from Jupiter and closer and further.
Mm-hmm.
And the forces inside of it, like, get heated more and more as it, like, kind of is, like, I don't know. How would you call what I'm doing right now with my hands?
Like, wavy lava lamp hands.
Yeah, like, it's just getting squeezed.
Yeah.
Let's call it what it is.
All right.
But if it wasn't getting the tidal forces like that, it would be the same composition. And it would look the same as our moon.
Okay.
So I thought that was kind of interesting that it's like, imagine if our moon was just giant volcanoes erupting all over
totally,
it.
Totally.
And that's what's happening on Io.
Inner demons just bursting forth.
Yeah, I mean.
That's pretty cool.
It'll send up like mushroom cloud plumes of lava in like 500 miles into the air, some of these volcanoes.
Well, so that's interesting to think about like constant active volcanoes as opposed to some of these dormant volcanoes that then eventually, much like a super earthquake, there's super volcanoes that can then fucking destroy entire communities.
Right, right.
And that's another thing that, can they really predict that well?
Volcanoes
like,
on Earth?
Yeah, like when, yeah, exactly.
There, you can see things waking up, like things kind of happen slowly enough. You know, I want to talk about Vesuvius one day because the lack of knowledge that Pompeii had about the way volcanoes work, like that one had an element where it exploded a huge amount of ash, and that would have indicated to everybody in modern society to be like, we gotta go now.
Right.
And they were all like, wow, it's like divine rain.
Of course.
And so they all stayed there, and then the eruption came 3 days later.
Hey, that's fucking wild.
Yeah.
I have a random thing that I looked into.
I love random things.
So at one point throughout this crazy, harrowing experience in Tremors, they reference a talcum mine, and I don't remember why or what the fuck they're even talking about, so I'm not even going to bother telling you guys why. But that's, I thought about a talcum mine, and I decided to research that. What the fuck is talc? Do you know what talc is? Talcum powder?
It's like a powder that
you use
on your balls?
Yeah.
Is it for your balls?
Or your feet, or your, there's, it's
dry
used,
skin?
Yeah. Talc is actually used in a wide variety of products that we see every single day.
Oh, really?
Okay. Let me tell you some of the properties of talc. So talc is actually the softest mineral out there.
Oh.
It's translucent. It has generally has a pearly luster. It's maybe green, white, gray, brown, or colorless. And it has a sheet structure similar to the micas. Talc is held together only by van der Waals bonds. Are you familiar with van der Waals bonds? Because I'm not an atom person, you know what I mean? I basically went to the kids' version
You're an
of
Eve
what the van der
Waals.
Yeah. Eve style. Basically, it allows the atoms to slip past one another very easily. What my understanding is that van der Waals bonds are not necessarily permanent bonds, sort of like how a gecko can very, you know, really stick to the side of a wall quickly, but can pull away, right? Like walking up, or like suction cups.
Yeah.
It's not a permanent bond, but it is strong for the time being.
Okay.
What that does is it allows it to be very soft, very easily broken apart. It has a very greasy, soapy feel, and it is also valued as a high temperature lubricant. So what they generally do is they crush this mineral, they crush talc into a white powder, and that's what's known as talcum powder. And it has this awesome ability to absorb moisture, oils, it absorbs odor. So that's why they use it in a lot of baby powders, foot powders, a lot of variety of cosmetics. It's the base for a lot of like mineral powder foundations for antiperspirants because it absorbs both water and or odor.
And it's safe to put all over our bodies.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, you think of baby powder as being like the most divine thing to put, you know, if it's safe for a baby's bottom.
Then, it is funny if you take like baby powder and you rub it with your fingers. It is like just
a
such
greasy.
A softness.
It's like silk.
Yeah, it
is. It's fucking wild.
How do you measure softness of a mineral? Is there like, can they look at like the physical structure of the mineral?
Probably. I would imagine that has to do with its density or like its ability to
carry
any kind of weight because it's so soft, like it breaks apart pretty easily, as I understand. It's an important ingredient for making ceramics, paint. They use it as filler a lot.
Is it a naturally occurring element?
Yeah.
Like you just like get it out of rock?
Yeah. Most of talc deposits in the United States are in metamorphic rocks on the eastern side of the Appalachian Mountains and in rocks metamorphosed in convergent terrains of Washington, Idaho, Montana, California, Nevada, and New Mexico. They're also found in Texas. So they have to take a lot of care to not let the talc get contaminated with other rock materials because that can not only have an adverse effect on the color of its product, but if other things are combined with it, it's not going to be as soft and delicate or whatever, which is what it's used for. Then like from the mine, it's taken to a mill where it's reduced and particle sized and then given to the different companies, whether they be baby powder manufacturers, whatever. But yeah, I thought that was one of those cool things of like, talcum powder, I guess I know what it is, but I didn't know. They also use it in ceramics. They use it in like bathroom fixtures, ceramic tile, popularly used in paint as a filler because it not only helps brighten, but like whiten paint.
Oh.
So it's one of these just like cool natural minerals that we use all the fucking time. And I didn't have any interest or understanding of why it's used. And yeah,
that's
minerals.
Really,
am I right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like other minerals that are as common or used in that kind of a thing that we like.
Well, I think of like table salt even.
That's a good point.
You know?
Yeah, like salt deposits.
Yeah. Like that's just a natural thing that because it absorbs flavor, it absorbs like the essence of another thing that we've used it in every meal that we've ever fucking eaten, you know?
Yeah, and that's really cool.
Yeah. Thanks, Tremors. Can I use one phrase that I read that I was like, you are too hot for TV.
Too hot for TV? I want it on the podcast.
They referred to talc as, quote, having the perfect cleavage between the sheets.
What?
Yeah.
What does that
mean? They were referring to like the sheets of the talc.
Okay.
And cleavage, I think, is a like, is a fucking, you know, rock term.
Yeah, it's a rock term.
But when I read that, I was like, perfect
boulders,
cleavage.
Yeah. You know?
You know, she's a lady in the streets, but she's got perfect cleavage in the sheets. You know what I mean? Science. I didn't have any lines.
I had one, which like, I just find this delightful. Running's what you do when the plan fails.
Was that Fred Ward?
I think so. I think it was Kevin Bacon's like, I got a plan, I'm going to run. And Fred Ward's like, running's what you do when the plan fails.
In retrospect, I feel foolish for not, because there's like delightful one-liners left, right, and sideways in this thing. But it was a lot of,
they weren't
sarcastic, like.
They weren't lines that would lead to like good scientific discussion. Right. They were just like delightful. Like, that's the charisma of the two of them carry this movie and make it from a crappy horror movie into like something that was spawned 5 movies in a TV show.
Oh my God. Yeah. I know. I got to say, I very much prefer the sandworms that you can't see than the, you know, because in the second one, they're like evolved and they run around on the land.
But
they have
it's heat seeking. They still don't have eyes in the sequel. I've only seen one and two.
I do have a very fun fact about the design of the Graboids.
Oh, please.
So one idea by the special effects crew was for the worms to have an outer shell. And then when they come above the dirt, the shell is supposed to retract to reveal a slimier inner worm. However, many production members started to giggle at the phallic resemblance it had with the foreskin. So this was changed to the big worm sprouting several smaller worms from its mouth.
Every design always has to be like, does it look like a dick?
Yeah, but that too is kind of like,
it's, well, I think there was a story. Apple has been building this giant new offices for the last like 6 years, mm-hmm. and before he died, this was like one of the last projects that Steve Jobs worked on, mm-hmm. and one of the stories of its design changing over time was that it was originally like three rings, and Steve Jobs's son like immediately looked at it and was like, that looks like a dick. And then Jobs was like, you're ridiculous. You're being ridiculous. Yeah. And then went into the office the next day and was like, all I see now is a dick. Dude, we got to change it. It looks like a dick.
It doesn't matter how far we evolve. It's like we have these baselines. Yeah. It, like our little lizard brains are just like dick.
I know. I just like love dick. That he was like, now it's all I could see.
I know. Once someone brings your attention, it's like when you were a kid and you would like find the weird sex shit in Disney movies, right?
Right, right.
Like once you saw it, you can't see it. Like one of the sea castles on the cover of the Little Mermaid. Now it just looks like a dick forever.
Yeah, is that?
Yeah, their little. Yeah, King Triton's little village or whatever.
Didn't he like get a boner in the movie? Is that a thing?
The priest has the boner. There's a dick sea castle.
Those
sex
animators.
Is spelled in some like wildflowers that go flying when Simba lands. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of
like
region.
Who for, is that? I guess that's just for the animators to
either that or it's much like we've talked about people just like finding meaning where there isn't, you know, just
okay.
being like, oh, it's obviously phallic.
You're saying although, it's not intentional.
Who knows?
Yeah,
I feel like it could be a mixture of both, but there's some that people are like, see right there, and there's like a freeze frame, and
right.
you're like, bro, you are reaching so hard.
Yeah,
although
it's like, what
that,
is Disney trying to
yeah,
change society?
I will say that priest's dick is hard to.
Hard to
hard
argue.
To, yeah, you're like, I'm not, that required like multiple frames, bro. Anyway, we're not sure what we're doing next.
No, but it's going to be a good one.
Yep.
In the meantime, you can find us at ohthatsathing.com, ohthatsathing on Facebook and Twitter.
I'm at itsajoyamia on Twitter.
I'm at Jeffrey Ekman on Twitter.
And please, please review us on iTunes if you so choose.
Yes.
please. Do it.
Choose.
If you want to.
Choose to do that. Have a good week, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.